a song when something special comes along. It's a long-winded directionless discussion for conversationalists.
You bring the wit.
You bring the brains and we'll talk it over between takes.
Welcome back to Between Takes with Opal Entertainment. I'm Aiden Driscoll.
And I'm Olivia O'Neill.
And today we are recording outside in the great outdoors.
We're going to be talking a little bit about our performing experiences of the past week.
We're also going to talk about Ayn Rand and objectivism.
And a little bit about eternity.
It's a real hoot and a half classic episode of
Between Takes. Harlem in her men and pearls. Won't dish the dirt with the rest of the girls. That's
so, for those of you watching online, we're in a different space. And you probably actually can hear the little birds chirping.
Chirp, chirp, chirp.
The cars
chirp,
going
chirp,
by. Chirp, we want to try going outside.
Chirp,
it is quite warm.
Chirp, 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 chirp.
Thanks.
Vroom. Chirp, vroom, vroom. Chirp, chirp, chirp.
Okay.
I was just letting you guys know what it kind of sounds like. Yeah, we're outside. We're having a good time. It is a very lovely, lovely morning. Or afternoon now, I guess. There's a nice big white cloud over there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, audio listeners are going to have a hoot with this one.
I've been wanting to do this for a while. I think it's just fun to, like, be outside a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to talk about today, Liv?
First, I have an album recommendation.
Okay, good.
I haven't listened the whole thing through because I think it just came out on the 21st.
Of what?
Of this month, July.
Oh,
so, what
month,
was it,
okay.
Thursday or something? Friday. Came out on Friday. It's called, it's the Arcadian's Wild's newest album. I don't remember what it's called now.
Bad
but it was recommended to me by my mom. And it's really good.
Mm, good.
Their storylines and their instrumentation is just really nice. It's a full album.
Cool.
So, I recommend.
Very cool. I listened to, I think I mentioned it very, very briefly last week, but the Milk Carton Kids. It came out in May. They're on, like, I Only See the Moon, I think is what it's called. I didn't find out about it until, like, last couple weeks ago, and I've been enjoying that. It's a good album. And then our friend Dell from We the Least recommended Gable Price and Friends, and I've been listening to them. Well, the other day I listened to a little bit of them, but they're pretty cool. They got some cool stuff. Yeah, they're kind of Colony House-esque, and they're, like, very fun alternative rock music, but, like, really well-written lyrics and really good, like, hooks and very punchy and stuff.
That reminds me, our music theory teacher recommended a song as well called Funny Feeling by Trula.
Oh, yeah, that's
also good. T-R-U-L-A-H.
Mm-hmm.
And then Del, when we saw him the other night, he also recommended that artist.
So Trula's going around.
So she's pretty awesome.
She's pretty cool. Yeah.
Cool lyrics, too. I actually have only listened to the one song.
Okay.
But I would like to listen to the rest because it just looks really cool. It's interesting how, like, song titles, album titles pull you in.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I don't know. I feel like I can pass some and it's like, oh, that's average. That's, like, whatever.
Sure.
But then if they have cool titles.
Yeah. Or if there's a thumbnail to the music video is really intriguing.
Mm.
Like, yesterday we were listening to Coldplay and Adventure of the Lifetime. The title, I'm like, okay, that doesn't grab my attention. But the thumbnail was a bunch of chimpanzees playing all the instruments. And I was like, all right, I got to check this out.
Interesting.
And I wasn't disappointed, but I was also disappointed because I didn't love the final thing. Do you think, are they ever going to see this Coldplay?
Oh.
Maybe if we tag them. All right. Anyway. Cool.
What else has been going on with you, Aiden? Anything new?
Pirate? I have. I was listening to a podcast. Well, hang on. We can get to that. Yes. Oh, well, I was listening to Pints with Aquinas, and Father Gregory Pine was on it. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about Christology. Have you ever heard of Christology?
I haven't.
Thomistic Christology. So Thomism is the kind of philosophy Thomas Aquinas, not started, but, like, he wrote a ton of philosophy and stuff like that then people since then have taken that, and it's referred to as Thomism. Christology is how, basically, of a relating to Jesus, which is most things, but it's specifically, like, how salvation works and all that, from my understanding. Now, this is a large thing. So it's specifically Thomistic Christology, which is how Aquinas describes Jesus working salvation and all that, which was pretty fascinating. Anyway, I feel like I can't give a very accurate summation of it, but it was a very fascinating. It was one of the more recent episodes of Pints
with Aquinas. Is there, like, one nugget that you pulled from that you, like,
one of the things was, like, everything Jesus did, he he did for the purpose of sanctifying it. Mm. Everything, you know, when he talks about, you know, I think it's in Mark where it talks about when he ate a food, thereby saying no food is unclean. Or I don't remember exactly the details of that story.
Okay.
You know, that he himself didn't need to be baptized, but he was baptized for the purpose of instituting baptism by, you know, he himself wasn't cleansed from sin because he was sinless, but he cleansed the waters so that then those waters could cleanse others to then be sanctified and so on. Huh. So anyway, it was a lot of things like that. And I just thought it was really, really fascinating. And they also talked a lot about the history of the rosary and things like that.
Interesting.
So that was cool. Very cool. Father Gregory Pine, very tall man. He's like 6'4" or something. Really? Like that, I think. Yeah. There's a picture of him and Matt and it's like, ooh. But it's like when they're sitting down, they have like very similar proportions. They're both like kind of very like fit, skinny guys. Mm-hmm. And then there's a picture of them standing next to each other. And it's like, he's like a foot taller than him. Wow. Anyway, that's cool. Funny. It's very fun. What about you? What's new with you?
Opal-wise, we had a pretty exciting week.
Oh, yeah.
Today is Sunday, but last Saturday and Sunday, we had a show on each of those days in Chattanooga, which mm-hmm. is about 2 hours away from where we are now in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And we played two very different venues. One was like a brewery, kind of family brewery mm-hmm. kind of place, very small.
Get the kids drunk and everything?
No.
Okay.
They had games and food and stuff. Yeah, like there was this father, and I'm assuming it's a daughter or something, mm-hmm. I don't know, playing like Battleship in
like
the corner, and they were so cute. And then like
the
one table was playing Apples to Apples and just having a fun time. So we were in the corner, you know, mm-hmm. playing our music and stuff. And that was interesting. Like, obviously you learn things and you're like, oh, I would have done this differently, but you don't really know until you get to the venue, especially right. since, we haven't, a lot of these are first time venues
right.
where, you know, so
yeah.
And then the next day was at a market in Chattanooga. That was a big Chattanooga market. It's kind of like a small fair farmer's market type place where yeah. a bunch of vendors and whatnot. It's in this big giant warehouse that's glass, I mm-hmm. think. So it's,
well, it's, I was picturing it? Like the Nashville farmer's market, which is a series of like barns and pavilions
yes.
and things like that.
This was
but
one
this is
giant
like just like one giant one. It probably took up maybe like, I don't know, maybe not quite two blocks, but
yeah.
a big chunk
so
of
we
ground.
Were at one end on like a stage with the full sound, and that was a really awesome experience. But mm-hmm. it filled the entire thing. So
yeah.
our voice, like I didn't really realize that until after. And we heard the next person go on, and I was like, you can hear us from all the way on the other
right.
end. I'm so glad I didn't know that, because that's like so nerve-wracking. But that was a great experience, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then this last, and then Thursday, we played at a venue in Nashville that we've never played at before.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also a new place, that, you know, like a very new vibe
right.
of, you know, for us. So
it was very fun. I really like it.
I've encouraged that we went to these places, did our thing, people enjoyed it. We learned, okay, we're going to do that next time, move
mm-hmm.
on. It's a very encouraging
right.
way of going about stuff.
I think also when you do a bunch of shows in more rapid success, if we just did the first show in Chattanooga, like a lot of cool things from there, we learned a lot of things, but there are also a lot of like just fresh, right off the bat, we had some sound issues, just some like technical things that
right.
were logistically frustrating to us. I think if we just had that show and didn't have any other shows, it would be really easy to just remember those are all the negatives and that's why performing is frustrating,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to we had like three within a week and that just gave like, well, here are the pros and cons of all three and we can find, but the average was we played a good set and we ended up having a good time and people came up and talked to us afterwards
mm-hmm.
and you kind of find like the cons become less of like a huge negative thing looming in your mind and more of a, that's a specific learning thing we need to take into account next time.
Yeah.
As opposed to just this, here's a reason I hate performing.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And also just realizing the people are going to feel comfortable. Even if, you know, you have sound issues and things aren't working. If you
right.
look like you're having a fun time, if you kind of make jokes about it or explain,
mm-hmm.
people are at ease and they
right.
realize, oh, we're human. Like we're trying to figure it
right.
out. But we're professional enough and are going to, you know, make
yeah.
you feel comfortable. And it's a lot of, like, it's interesting how, in one way, we're in charge of the, what's the word? Ambiance of
yeah.
the room. I don't know if that's the word.
Sure.
The energy, the...
Atmosphere.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. It's cool.
It is.
Like, if we're coming in with, like, anxiousness or
right.
upset or mad... That's not a very, like, that's, we're putting
right.
that on people, so.
And I think, yeah, there is something where it's like, yeah, you're holding instruments and there's speakers in front of you and mics around you and all that, that just kind of command a different presence than just, we're just kind of chilling. You know, if we just went to go hang out and we're just playing by ourselves, not performing over in the corner, people probably wouldn't pay us much mind. Mm-hmm. But because we're like standing up facing out, that's like a different thing. And I think, like you said at the one at the brewery on Saturday, that like, because it was like a really big, like kind of loud, echoey space. So because of that, we couldn't turn the volume, like the sound up very much, or else we'd get like a feedback loop because it was so echoey and all that. Mm-hmm. So we had to keep it pretty low. So a lot of people couldn't hear us super well. But you said like, even if they glance up and they can't hear us super well, but they can kind of hear what's going on, but they see we're engaged, that's going to give them, at least give us a better shot of having them step closer so they can hear better or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a... After performing these last... Yeah, it was like 3 shows in about a week. Less than a week.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any new reasons of why you love performing?
That's a good question. I never thought of like new reasons. I feel like I kind of rehashed some of the...
And if you don't, that's
similar
fine.
Ones. I think the one on Sunday was really cool because it wasn't like people are paying tickets to come and watch us, mm-hmm. but it was more of a, there are seat tables and chairs towards the front of the stage where people can come and sit and listen for a while. I think that gave like, people just want to experience live music. It wasn't like they knew what band was on and they were there to see us. It was, you know, Hannah was the only person we knew. I guess mm-hmm. Stuart and his family came by.
Yeah.
It was just primarily strangers, but it was just people who wanted to sit down. I mean, maybe it was just they wanted to sit down because they've been walking around the market for 2 hours or whatever. But sure. They want to sit down and they want to listen to live music for a little bit. And so that was just kind of a cool thing where I think that's just a cool experience to be a part of that. And to be the one to like provide the live music is really fun and exciting too. So yeah, I guess that's maybe like the off the top of my head that I can think of. What about you?
These past shows have been for people mainly, kind of like you said, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So in one way, you're getting a more honest feedback of the music itself because they don't know you as people.
Because we're friends with a lot of liars.
No, you still...
Just tell us what we want to hear.
No. I love playing for people that we know and like support.
Because they lie support to us. And they...
So, anyway, what was I saying?
You just get a more honest feedback. He's not going to bite you. That's not a stinging bug. Calm down, Livy. Livy, okay. It's really fine. I promise you it's fine. Just exhale. Exhale instead of inhale. Try that.
Sorry.
I forgive you.
I had a thought about this, and now I can't think. Played for people we don't know. Got some reactions. I had a different sense of comfortableness on stage these last few shows. It's like a subtle confidence.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is a good confidence of just like, we believe what our music is saying is good.
Sure, yeah.
We're excited about it and we're here to just have fun. And I feel like we're becoming looser and more open to just playing and sharing the music because we've been with the song so long, mm-hmm. for one. And I think that's getting across too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting a more of a sense of like, I can see what people love performing it. Like, there's a high that comes with it. I feel like it's like similar to like a runner's. Mm-hmm. High, like once you can start running and you go and you're just like feel kind of that adrenaline.
You know this from experience, or
no? No, not at all. You know this. No, I know. Okay, let's talk about that. People talk about that, and I've gone on runs and I can never get there.
Mm-hmm.
I never feel great about it.
Anyways. I feel great afterwards, but during it's almost always like just
it's terrible.
This can be fun. I think this can be enjoyable.
But anyways.
Yeah.
I felt that kind of for the first time over the last couple of shows, and it's really exciting. It makes me want to perform even more.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's interesting that you've, like, been a part of a band for, 4 years at this point, and you're just now experiencing, like, it's fun.
In honesty, like, we haven't played that much.
We haven't. This is definitely the most concentrated we've ever performed. Even last summer we performed a decent amount, but that was, I don't know, 15 shows over the course of the spring. That whole kind of starting in May-ish
and
through.
Also different. One of them was in a store.
Right.
A clothing store that we were part of the... It was like an art fair. So people kind of circulate through. It's like a very small town called Franklin. Not super small, I guess.
I mean, it's a
smallish.
Pretty small local town.
It's like a suburb of Nashville, basically.
It's a pretty big tour place, though.
Yeah. Anyway, they have an art fair.
We also last year played a lot of this. We played Finley's multiple times. We played the coffee house
with
multiple
no sound
times.
Also,
right. We played a lot of places more. Whereas this, we're playing a larger number of shows, and they're almost all at places we've never played before and different from each other. So I think that's another
thing. And have kind of a designated stage area.
Right. The whole atmosphere, I think, it's much more purposeful this year than last year. Was much more anything we can get, and we'll just say, can we come back next week, just so we can get, mainly just so we can practice and just see how audiences react. And I think we spent all that time, one, I think, honing the arrangements of the songs we hadn't recorded for the album yet, and two, just to, like, practice and have that experience and get a little taste of that. And then we spent this last fall through spring recording and finishing the album, that now I feel like the arrangements are solid and secure, and now it's just learning how
performing
to adapt to into the different types of rooms of, like, okay, this is more of a brewery setting, these are the things we've learned from the brewery places we've played, this is more of a market where there's a designated place for people to come sit down if you want to. Here are the things we want to take into account when that's more of the setting,
and kind of knowing, I mean, a part of the performance is talking, mm-hmm. and you know, introducing songs and things like that. And we could easily talk about the songs for a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Just performing is another thing that we're still learning and trying to get better at. Oh my gosh, get out of here. Sorry. Try to ignore the large fly.
Are you excited to record our next album?
I can't even think about that right now.
Okay.
I'm just living in the moment.
I feel like we're both we're nearing the end. I think we talked about this a little bit last time. We're nearing the end of our, like, 2023 bucket list, if you will, of, like, here are the things we want to accomplish by the end of the year, and we're getting to the end of that, which is really good and encouraging and fun and stuff. So part of me is like, great, let's just kick back and not do anything. And part of me is like, how do we get ahead and keep ourselves busy for the foreseeable future and all that? But then it's like, yeah, just kind of...
Well, we have some new songs that we've played, like Marks of a Drifter is one that I think would be fun to record at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It's just knowing, is it a single, is it a...
Right, thing? Is it part of a larger thing?
We're going to be doing some house shows in the fall, too.
Mm-hmm. We haven't announced that officially.
Oh, right.
More details to come, though.
But that's not, like, yeah. It's
fine. I mean, you guys can know. We'll let you in on this. Just keep it under the hat.
Anyways, we have some projects that are coming up that will be kind of new and stuff.
Right.
And now that we've kind of played our album release party, had a lot of people that hadn't heard us before that we know now. So, like, coworkers that hadn't known us last year or what have you. And now they're sending us recommendations of places to play because they know Nashville. So that's just, you're building connection and building things. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a weird thing. I still have, what's it called? Like imposter syndrome, where you feel like, I don't belong here. So people recommend, like, you to come play here, or you reach out to, like, these venues and they say, oh yeah, we'd love to have you. And it's like, are you sure?
Right.
Like, have you listened? Because there's just something that doesn't feel right. And I don't know why.
Yeah.
Because I believe it. I like our music. I think it's fun.
Right. It's like, yeah, if we were audience members and we walked into any venue we've played and saw Opal Entertainment play, we'd be like, yeah, they're great. We like them.
Probably.
And they fit into this place, this venue. It doesn't feel weird or out of place. But because it's us and we're like, no, I feel, yeah, I kind of get what you're saying. I think, though.
We also know that we're going to be growing and getting better and better. Like, we can see, we know where we're at, and we can see we're going to, you know, it's a perfectionism mindset.
Right.
So maybe that's part of it. We're like,
we're not even getting where we're gonna be yet.
Yeah,
exactly. But I mean, that's hopefully always gonna be there, right? And so, yeah, I think there are even things on Companions of Passing that's been out less than a month at this point, where I'm already like, not, oh, that's a mistake, but just, oh, I wonder if, try this little thing, that little thing, right?
Yeah.
Big vroom vroom. Minor vroom vroom. Secondary vroom vroom.
We live by a road that leads right to a lake.
So on the weekends, it just doesn't...
It's like constant.
It's just constant.
It's awesome, though.
Vehicular
people
traffic.
Being outside, enjoying some time with the family on a Sunday afternoon.
It's a good problem to have when you go to a lot of the state parks or lakes on the weekend. It's really hard to find parking.
Mm.
It's a good sign that there's a lot of people who want to be outside. That's nice. Liv, do you have any thoughts on The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand? I say that for several reasons. One, we played at a place called Fountainhead Tap Room last weekend in Chattanooga. And I was like, Fountainhead, I wonder if that's named after the book. And I was walking, they have this bookshelf, and I was walking past, and right near the front was Fountainhead by Ayn Rand. I was like, nice. And then you've been reading The Fountainhead. That's the other reason I bring it up.
Yeah, I've only read probably the first, like, 30, 40 pages of it.
You're decently far, though. I mean, I just saw if that thing that's in there is your bookmark.
I think so. I don't know, actually.
Okay, maybe it's not.
Anyways, it's a lot of setup. I feel like I'm still in the setup, and I'm ready to see what the thoughts of the people are.
A while back, you talked about how you like the setup.
I love the setup. But this is just about, maybe when it's
but
like...
But I like the setup when it's interesting.
The beautiful farmlands of Ireland or something.
So you don't like the setup when it's like greedy architects trying to manipulate each other.
I don't know. I do like it. I'm just excited to see where it's going. I mean, you can agree, right? It's dense. It's a bit dense.
It is. I read an abridged version, and I really, really enjoyed it. So maybe if I read the unabridged version, I wouldn't enjoy it.
I'm also
much.
Getting... I need to go... I feel like I've stepped away from it for probably like a month. So I feel like I need to go back and actually reread the part I read again. So that's like what I'm dreading, because like as I read, it's probably going to be like, oh yeah, that's right, that's right. Mm-hmm. But if I picked up where I am, I feel like I'm not going to remember the characters and like what they're... I feel like I would get them confused, so... But I do really want to read it. It's like a classic, so...
There is a solid turning point about halfway through. Big clunk. That I think... One picks up the pace of the book and also adds a very like personal. At the beginning, it's the personal dynamic is much more. What's his name? Peter Rourke, is the main guy, and the other guy. What's his name?
Oh yeah, that's the other thing. I didn't know who the main one was because they're brothers or something.
No, they're just friends? Rivals. They're friends. Yeah.
Friends, rivals, frenemies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who are we actually like following? Because at this point, it's given me the same amount of.
At the beginning, yes, it gives you like the introduction of Rourke. My phone's too warm to show me anything right now. Yeah, at the beginning, it's basically just like, here's Rourke, and here's, I wish I could remember his name.
It's okay. Wait, the other guy.
The other guy. And it's just kind of showing their different designs and kind of the different paths they're taking, and they're both like, are they still like fresh out of college type thing? And he's working with the...
Really big name.
The kind of disgraced architect.
Oh, you're talking about that guy.
Right, Rourke is working under the guy who he thinks is a better architect than anyone else, but isn't a successful architect because he's trying new things.
And then the other guy is under, like, the biggest name.
Right.
And he's starting kind of from the bottom, working up and stuff.
But it's kind of a... and I think it's kind of a fascinating thing at the beginning, how it is exploring. Peter Rourke wants to be a unique architect, wants to build things that are artistic and creative. Even though, and he's working under this guy that he sees as, like, this idol of his that is extraordinarily unsuccessful. The other guy.
Actually, I think he was successful at one point, and
then
he kind of turned crazy.
Because he's been doing more and more elaborate things. He's not nearly successful.
Not as conventional,
anymore.
Not as like.
Right.
Could use the same design for many buildings.
Whereas
make
Rourke's,
money.
Yes,
basically.
Whereas Rourke's rival is much more fitting into the system, playing the long game, but not. Not exercising any creativity.
Yeah,
whatever,
that was the thing
like
that drew me into the book was. Their versions of what success was and how they chose to get there. Because both want to be known for their architect. Mm-hmm. Like, that's their goal, right? And how do they get there? And it's interesting because you see that today of just, like, different professions and the ways people get there. And it's like, which way is right? Because at one time I'm like, oh, the Peter who's going to the guy who he really likes, I'm like, oh, he's kind of right. He's like going out of the system.
He's
and,
the more artistically
but then at the same
satisfied.
Time,
right.
But at the same time, he's stubborn.
And greedy.
Yeah. And judgmental. And then the other guy is just trying to like be the next millionaire, it feels like.
Right.
So he's just following. But he also cares about his work.
Right.
So it's just interesting because
really
like you think you know, oh, they're not doing it right. But then you're like, oh, wait. Now you're not doing it right.
Right.
So.
And the book covers a lot of time. It's one of those where there's a movie of it, I think with Gregory Peck in it, that kind of, maybe I should watch that tonight. Should we watch the movie tonight? Or would that spoil
I feel like
it
I should
you?
Read the book
first. All right,
first.
I'll let you read it first. Maybe I'll, anyway. I think that's what I really, really liked about it was it feels like this, I don't know, long-term epic, political is the wrong word, but like architecturally political thriller type thing. Of it covers a lot of time over the course of the book. It's like a couple decades where it starts when they're fresh out of college and then it's like as they evolve into their, you know, early middle ages or whatever.
Do we get to see them outside of their work life?
Yes. So that's the thing about the halfway point in the book. There's a turn where then like other characters get involved and that starts complicating things. And then there's like, then Rourke is getting manipulated, but he's aware he's getting manipulated by a different character. Mm-hmm. And then he's trying to like play that back on this person.
Oh,
and then that person tries to manipulate. And it's just this whole like web of lies and deceit and all that. And
you're like, oh.
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. It's like, there's this like, I don't know. Espionage might be too strong a word, but there's like this crazy, I don't know. I think it's just it's this big game, and I think that's the thing that is fascinates me again. At the very end, he gives a speech. I won't spoil too much.
Sure.
He gives a speech, and he's basically talking about, like, I forget the words. He talks about the parasite and the architect, maybe, or like the creative or something like that. He's basically talking about there are those that create, and then those who suck off of the ones who are creative. Mm. And he's like, I'm the creative, and you're trying to leech off of my own success. And thanks. What? You don't like the term leech?
No, that's just like a big accusation.
It is, yeah. But I mean, that's the thing, is that the book kind of... And it's also one where, because it's told in third person, you think like, oh, it's this very objective... it's telling you just what the facts are.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times where you think like, is this just his... Kind of like Till We Have Faces, where there are points in that book where you think, is this real or is this just her misconception of something? Mm-hmm. Is part of this real, but she misunderstood part of it or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Yeah, I wanted to reread that. And then I just reread a little snippet before we started recording, and it just reminded me. Yeah, there's some cool stuff in that book.
I should read it.
You haven't read Atlas Shrugged, have you?
No.
If you had, you probably should be reading it. What do you mean?
That book. That come before The Fountainhead or after? Because I thought it was like similar.
Remember.
It was like a bigger version of The Fountainhead or something,
it's,
right?
It's a similar... I mean, most of Ayn Rand is
built off of it.
Is basically, her fiction is basically just, yeah, different scenarios where characters are practicing objectivism.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I don't remember when it was published.
Okay.
What do you think? So she also did Anthem. You've read Anthem.
Yeah.
You like that one.
I like that one. Very short.
Is that why you like it?
No, I just think it's a concise story. She doesn't, like, add in any extra filler. Mm-hmm. It just moves quite nicely.
What is it about the substance of the story itself? Because that was, like, one of your top
It follows
books.
A guy... who, you know, lives in this society mm-hmm. that she builds. And it's dystopian, so it's kind of this futuristic world where everything is controlled by a higher-up government, like, very controlled.
Mm-hmm. And you're, like,
where they don't even
into
have
what
names.
Your occupation
like, yeah,
is. And, yeah.
So, it's kind of weird because mm-hmm. you do see similarities of things that happen now. It's like, if that went any further, that could be that. You know, that's what those
right.
are built off of. It's, like, the exaggerated
right.
ways that you see in the world today. So, But the character itself is very, you see the feelings it has and the ways it's trying to, like, it's almost not a human. It's almost like something else. Because
yeah, sorry.
He's discovering why he doesn't think things are right. He, like, has a feeling of this isn't right.
And everything is in reference to the first person plural, to the we, to the everything must benefit everyone. And
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Which on the outside... sounds great.
Right, sure, at first glance.
But the individual is non-existent.
Right.
Like, they're all, and they're
so
numbered and everything.
I think it's really interesting because it's written from a perspective of a character discovering humanity for the first time,
mm-hmm.
in a way, right? He has these instincts of that doesn't sit right with me, and then slowly starts to discover things and recognizes...
And he's kind of, you know, he's timid, but you
right.
see him overcome something in himself and then for the greater good. So it's just
mm-hmm,
like a,
yeah.
it's kind of the ultimate, like, similar to The Hobbit, where it's kind of an underdog,
mm.
like, little guy, and then he overcomes something, the biggest thing in the
sure.
whole universe of that world. I don't know what the words are.
Yeah, okay.
This feels similar.
Sure, I get what you're saying.
And he falls in love, and so there's, like,
yeah.
a human aspect to it.
Right.
Which I enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's one of those, like, as it was going... So Ayn Rand, have you read Virtue of Selfishness, her collection of essays,
like
philosophy?
It.
I think you would find it interesting. I think you'd ultimately disagree with most of it, which I think I ultimately disagree with most of it. Her, me and my brother Kieran talked about this, her descriptive philosophy saying this is how humanity is, this is the natural trajectory of people. I'm like, yeah, I agree. People are naturally selfish. People are naturally self-interested. People are naturally... other more or less synonyms to selfish. But her descriptive philosophy of therefore this is how we should act and combat that, I disagree with most of that.
Oh, okay.
Because I think she says basically lean into that and embrace it and run away from, you know, sacrifice, selflessness. There's no such thing as sacrifice because sacrifice always, you benefit something from that, so then it's just a transaction. And I think, like, you can make that argument for anything in a lot of ways. So,
and we're not perfect, but I do think we strive, and God, I think the power of God is true within us and right. can help us to make those sacrifices true mm-hmm. and pure. So,
right. Yeah. And I think I was talking to Margaret at one point and she was saying, you know, even if someone jumps in front of a bullet for a friend, we can look at that and go, oh, that's such a noble thing that this person did to save his friend. But we can just see, what if the friend is just going, oh, to live without this person would be torment. I don't want to experience that. I'm going to jump in front of the bullet. Even if that was literally the conscious thought process of doing that. Well,
probably
that
can not, be a, because...
That
can,
no, I'm saying, let's just imagine that in this hypothetical okay. scenario. Even if that's the case, that those are selfish motives he has, the action is still saving a life, is laying his life down for someone else, right? Mm-hmm. So... I think that, like, even, you know, at times there are, you know, it goes both ways, right? A bad intention can justify a good means or good ends, right? And a bad means can justify a good ends or cannot or whatever, you know.
For me, the best decisions that I've made in my life, I couldn't tell you what I was thinking because I was just saying, you know, God, what do I do here? Okay, do sure. this. And then you could say, well, you're being selfish because that made you look good in this light.
Sure,
or this.
Sure.
But it's
yeah.
like, maybe, but that's, I think it can be true that the reason was not of selfish intent. It was right. literally God telling me to do this thing and I just right. acted on it.
That's what I was saying about, like, you can, I think you can water down any decision, any action to a selfish transactional decision.
But I'm saying,
I'm
saying you can't always. I'm just disagreeing with you. Is
okay.
What
What's an example? Give me a hypothetical.
What I just said.
Well, can you give me a specific within
that? Well, we can do the same bullet thing.
What? So what is...
So,
give me the play-by-play.
Person is about to get a bullet in them, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then God tells you,
jump. In front of that bullet?
So then you jump. And okay. there's no decision saying, I can't live without them. I want to look good in front of these people. I want to feel like a hero. No. God telling you, jump, you jump.
Okay.
That's my...
So...
And I think that's more common in the day-to-day. Rather than thinking.
So, yes, in practice and in how we should live, I believe that that is the case. I believe that is what we should strive for. I'm saying I don't feel like it's a logical stretch. I don't think it's a theological truth. I don't think it's a logical stretch for someone to say, oh, they just did that because they'd get saved faster, because they want to see God now. They want to look good in his eyes, you know, which I would say all three of those are good intentions, are good things to desire. And that may very well be the exact vehicle. That may even be the reality of what is happening in that instance. I ultimately don't believe, I'm kind of just playing devil's advocate and saying, I think Ayn Rand makes a lot of points where I go, yes, logically, in this hypothetical scenario, that is true. I don't think that is often, or even potentially ever, how it actually works.
What is the selfish thing? Or the way
yes,
I'm talking
I do
about?
Think we are naturally selfish. We're born into, you know, in sin I was conceived, right? We are born into a fallen world. We are born broken, and we live out that way. But like you said, the power of God is real that wants to perfect us, and our ability to respond to that and act accordingly is also real, right? And we can respond and be made more perfect, right? And shed more of our brokenness, right? So I'm saying right again. I'm going to try and stop that as much.
Okay.
My mom said it's like an East Coast thing. A lot of New Jersey people
oh,
do
really?
That. Yeah.
That's funny.
So yeah, I don't know. I agree with you ultimately. Yes, I completely agree with you. But I do think in this, as a thought yeah. experiment, in this hypothetical scenario where we're just examining the logic of it, I think Ayn Rand's observations seem true and consistent in some regards.
Sure.
But again, I don't think that means embrace your selfishness and always see everything as a transaction, because I think that completely diminishes the concept of humanity, right? If it is merely a series of transactions and that's all life is, then I don't know. That doesn't mean anything. That's a very shallow, boring life to me.
I guess if we want to talk about this any further, I don't know. But so picture like a 2-year-old.
Okay.
We could spend time telling them you're born into sin, selfishness, whatever. I feel like that's actually quite hurtful.
Okay.
I think the power I think the power of our words to kids and to people is I don't believe in like manifestation, but I believe that our words have power. So if in a certain way. So if I'm telling a 2-year-old, you know, there's 2 2-year-olds that are the same person or something.
That are the same person?
One life, there's a 2-year-old and you constantly say, you build them up and you say the good qualities that they have and you say, this is what we strive for. This is what we go for. And then you take another one and you say, you are born in selfishness. You can get over it, but this, you are born this way. That is not the right thing to do. Don't do this. Don't do this. I feel like I'm using kids as an example because they come into the world and they look for direction. That's what you do for, you know, you direct them as parents, I assume. I'm not a parent.
And they slowly learn discernment on what to accept and what to reject.
Based on that, one can imagine the person, the child that you give affirmation to is going to grow up with a more positive outlook and not judgmental of other people and give that positivity back into the world.
Right.
To the one you're telling the selfishness thing about and kind of saying, you are broken. I mean, you say God saved you, but do you kind of get my point?
If you focus on that
and you think about the selfish, I feel like that's not a good place to be.
I feel like you're drawing two extremes.
Yeah, to make a point, I guess.
Yes, and I get the point, and I agree with you. And I think that is true what you said about, like, not manifestation and just you say it and poof, it happens. But language has power, and what you speak into each other's lives will play a significant role going forward from there, right?
Mm-hmm.
If those are the only two options, are those two extremes, then yeah, I'm obviously going to say I'm going to speak positively, even if it means negating the reality of sin and evil and brokenness, right? I'm saying, I think Jesus acknowledged a lot of brokenness in humanity. He spent a lot of time acknowledging I feel like the majority of the Sermon on the Mount is, you were told this and this and this and this. That's broken. That's fallen. Mm. That doesn't make sense. I'm telling you this and this and this and this, right?
Sure.
Like we do in our album, right? Rusty Travels, I think, is a sad song. I think it's a song about someone hopelessly trying to grasp onto, when you sing, I know you won't abandon the rusty travels of this world, I interpret that. The character that I project onto the person singing that song doesn't fully believe that, is doubting whether or not that's true, is trying to believe that, is trying their best to believe it, but can't fully. I think that's a sad song. I think there's a lot of hope in it, but I think it's a very sad song. Mm. And I don't think those are mutually exclusive. I think, the Sullen Man acknowledges the darkness and the legitimate, terrible struggles that people go through while still trying to pick you up and carry you along, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's just like, again, if those two extremes are the only two options, I'm obviously going to go with the one that you think is better. But I think that there is also a place to focus and to put an emphasis on our brokenness and our fallenness. If we only put our emphasis on that, yes, I think that can be very harmful. And we can negate grace and mercy and the whole incarnation itself, right? Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I get that. I guess I just have trouble thinking about a baby is born and it's already selfish and terrible. And I know that there's different viewpoints on that.
Right.
And I guess I just don't quite know myself. I thought I knew what I thought, but now I guess I'm struggling with that. Because I think if a baby is born and they pass away, I think they go to heaven. Sure, I think that happens up till, who knows? And maybe it's more people than we think. Maybe all these people do bad stuff throughout their whole life and you're like, oh, they're not going to heaven. Maybe they do. I mean, we just don't know. So I guess I just have a hard time putting judgment on.
And like, I'm not trying to pass judgment on their eternal salvation. I think I spend more time focusing on the Garden of Eden before the fall than I do eternal life in heaven. I rarely think about heaven. And maybe I should spend more time focusing on heaven. But I'm not saying this to say these are the people that go to heaven and these are the people that don't. I'm very much not in the market of drawing lines. Sure. I'm in the market of trying to find out what are the lines that have been drawn.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like I said, on the Sermon on the Mount, I feel like Jesus draws a lot of lines. I want to look at what those lines are and how those apply to my life and how I live those out. How I acknowledge I have believed these lies that he is pointing out. How do I renounce those lies? Mm-hmm. How do I accept his truth, right? Does that make sense?
I was just going to your point of you saying, and this is like a different conversation in a way. We're born to this world. We're selfish already. I'm saying I'm not sure I believe that. I just wanted to say that on here just because I wanted to show that I might not. I just want to make sure that I don't quite believe that. I'm not sure if I do.
Do you think we accumulate sin? Do you think, are we born perfect and flawless and then by living in the world just seeing? I don't think every child is born with malice.
I just don't know how black and white it is.
Children are born with evil imprinted onto their souls. I think children are born without. I think the natural course of humanity is we are born without the wholeness of God.
Really?
I think even Christians, even the best, you know, Mother Teresa's and C.S. Lewis's don't have the fullness of God. Hey, gang.
Hey.
Aiden lived from the future.
Quick. We've never done this before. We intersperse in the episode.
We did on the West Side Story episode. Well. I punched in because I said the wrong thing. And now we're amending a thing again.
Yeah, we want to clarify a little bit of this next part of the conversation because we end up talking about kind of two different things. Like, looking back, we're arguing because we did not define our terms correctly. Yes. So, conversation still, but it's like,
yeah.
I think it was a little bit unnecessary argument because
what I said was something to the effect of we don't have I don't remember if it was wholeness or fullness of God. And you interpreted that as we only have a percentage of God.
Yeah.
Which I obviously don't think is the case.
Yeah. Like we can experience the real God here on earth as well as the real one that we will experience in heaven.
Right. What I was saying is we can't comprehend intellectually the fullness of God.
Right.
And that's where we were getting tripped up. So for the next few minutes, we're going to be discussing something that neither of us are fully on the same page about because we're not on the same page about what the topic is.
But we want to include it still because that's sometimes how conversations go.
Yes.
And we have to learn how to communicate with other people. And this is just a little prime example
this
of it.
This is a great opportunity. Okay. So enjoy the rest of the show, folks. Between tanks. Right?
Why?
On this side of heaven.
Why?
What?
How come?
Because they are still living in a fallen world.
So I don't think that's true.
You think we might not experience the fullness of God while still on earth?
Yeah.
The absolute pinnacle, the fullness of
maybe
you think,
not in
so,
every
so,
way we can see him or
that's what
if
I'm saying.
If we let him in, we can experience him to the fullness.
To the fullness of our capabilities. I don't think that's the same as the I don't
but,
where, but
why
God,
do you think that?
Why
do you
mean?
Think that?
Why do I think we can only experience him now for the fullness of our, because I feel like he promises something better. Because he says they're going to prepare a place for you, which I think is if it's only this, I don't see what the distinction is.
I'm saying in your heart. I don't think our surroundings have anything to do with how we experience the fullness of God as far as who he is in you.
I think God wants us to experience absolute definitive perfection. And I don't think we're capable of experiencing that while on earth.
Sure. Okay, so I guess I'm talking more about
our specific relationship with God?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we can experience him if we let him in.
We can absolutely experience him. I don't think we can experience his fullness because I think he doesn't want us to just experience a fullness to our own capability between him and yourself, but also between ourselves and his entire church.
Sure.
So I think we're not fully capable of doing that now.
I guess I think I can ask God a question and receive an answer in the realness that it happens if I were to ask him a question in heaven and receive the answer.
Sure.
I guess I'm just pointing to the fact that it's real. We experience
right. No,
real.
Yes.
So
I
maybe I don't,
that.
Maybe you're like, we don't see the fullness of God because we don't, our minds can't understand
right.
who he is fully because it's so great and so
right.
grand. So yes, I do agree with that. I see what you're saying. I'm just speaking more to like, we experience his fullness in that we experience direct relationship with him. Like any person, we can have that with God.
Sure.
we can. We maybe not. It might take years of life trying to figure out that so and get closer and whatnot.
You, yes. Okay, that makes sense. So you know your mom really, really well, right?
Right.
You don't know her fully. In that you don't know every single instance that has occurred in her life.
Yes, but I know her.
Right. I know no, what no, her but I know, but what?
So I guess that, okay, so.
But I think that, yes, I agree. Because I think you said that, correct me if I'm wrong. We've talked a lot about how knowing Jesus is so much different than knowing stories about Jesus, mm-hmm. right? Knowing stories about Jesus is important, I think is crucial. But without, you know, he himself says, you search the scriptures as if they are what give you eternal life, and yet you refuse to know me. So if we are only reading the gospels for the purpose of knowing stories about Jesus, that doesn't mean anything, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the distinction you draw between, you know, the essence of who your mom is, even if you don't necessarily know every single occurrence that happened within her life. Yeah. In the same way that we only have 3 years of Jesus' ministry over the course of 4 books, and a snippet of when he was 12 and a snippet of when he was born, right? Mm-hmm. Even there. So I guess I'm saying...
But I do see how you... We don't know the full essence of God because we can't understand something so grand.
Because he is an infinite being, and I think that's why we have eternity, is to get to know him better and better and better. I mean, in the last battle, when Aslan keeps saying, come further up, come further in, that's a common... It's more of a Thomistic thing. But that idea... is that's what God wants, is come further up, come further in. There's never going to be something to not know further, right?
Yeah,
he's never going to want to stop revealing himself because he's never has anything left. He will always have something left to reveal,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah.
So I think that's okay, kind of what I'm saying, is like even your mom in her finite being has more to reveal to you, right? Mm-hmm. Partially because she's still growing as well, but also because there are things from her past that you don't know about.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just saying, I think, there's something deeper that...
Right, I'm not saying that negates the fact that you know your mom, or that negates the fact that you do know God. Mm-hmm. I'm saying you don't know the fullness of God. You don't know the absolute pinnacle of his existence, because I don't think that exists.
Okay. Huh.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Do you disagree with that?
No, I agree. I think, I agree with that.
Okay. This is interesting. Talking about live shows and go to objectivism and then eternity and whatnot. Eternity is a weird thing. I don't think about it so much because I think I've heard people make definitive claims, and I'm like, that really just doesn't sit right with me for whatever reason. And not about make definitive claims about what eternity looks like, about what heaven looks like. This is exactly how it is. Sure. And I think as soon as you do that, it's like you're negating the eternity aspect of it, which is that
we're not told all, much
all
about
good
it.
And perfect and beautiful things will happen in heaven.
Yeah, we're not told like very logistical, like no. structural. ways of what heaven looks like. So I think that's for a purpose too.
It's
probably because we really don't know. Like there's probably no words to explain it.
Look at, you know, Jason Everett pointed this out, that, you know, the Psalms talks about, you know, my God is a lamp unto my feet, unto my path. A lamp doesn't give much light. He's only, you know, and there's the Augustine quote that's something to the effect of God will illuminate, what is it? God will illuminate only as far as your next step or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I think, look at the little bit of power and control you do have, and look at how much you're capable of using only that. If you did have the same understanding as God, like how much would we abuse it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, I think we have fallen angels and the demonic and whatnot.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
It is
a lot
crazy.
We don't know, I guess.
I think that a lot. It's like, I'm not in charge of who goes to heaven and who doesn't. Thank goodness I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool.
And I guess, I think growing up you hear, especially for kids, you try to tell them black and white things because that's easier for them to understand. You don't want to just be like, well, if it were in this case, it'd be this way. And if it's this case, it'd probably this. Maybe there's this idea from this person and this idea. But
sure.
You usually tell them black and white stuff. And I think I'm starting to come out of that of just like, we actually do not know.
Right.
And we do not know.
And
there's no way to, you know, judgment is on other people is just the worst. So...
I will say a couple things about that. One, before you judge someone, walk a mile in their shoes. Because then you'll be a mile away from them and you'll have their shoes.
Woo!
I just really think that's funny. And I would say, like, with my parents, I would ask them a question. And the common thing was, we don't know exactly. And that could be, I'm not personally convinced one way or the other on this or that. It could be... our immediate family haven't been given a definitive answer from God himself. It could mean we as Christians as a whole, it hasn't been revealed to us. And I think, yes, I think there is a, I think for me that was really important to recognize, one, my parents are fallible people who don't have all the answers, and they rely on something greater than themselves. Mm. They rely on something greater than the church. They rely on something greater than spiritual leaders and mentors.
Yeah.
And they rely on God himself. That was really helpful for me to know, and that's been incredibly vital for me to understand. But I do think, like you said, like if a kid asks you, hey, what's this? And you give them 10 different options and say, some people think this and this and this and this. It can be hard for them because a couple of those might be like direct heresies, you know?
Sure.
A couple of those might be completely contrary to what's real. So there's a point where it's like, you don't necessarily want to give them, here's this and this and this. I'll let you figure it out.
No.
I do think there's an importance in saying, I lean this way. This makes sense to me. There are a lot of things in Christianity where I think there's not a definitive right and wrong. You have to believe this or believe that. I think there are multiple options that are still within the confines of that could be the case. And I tend to lean this way. I tend to lean that way, right? For me, that was really important and helpful to understand my faith, to understand Christianity, to understand God. But like, yeah, to your point, like it can be confusing sometimes if it's just, here are 10 options, 4-year-old, go figure it out.
Well,
is that kind of what you're
saying? I meant more, not 10 options, meaning 10 that you wouldn't even believe, but just,
sure. Okay.
I'm just saying if a kid asks me, what's a good example? Well, who goes to heaven? Well, if you do this sin and this sin and this, you know, that, you know, I don't know. No, I wouldn't say that anyways.
That's a really bold example.
But
to
some
start
people
with
could be like, oh, what's the word?
Sure.
I don't know. I might say to that, you know, what I believe is, I don't know who goes to heaven really, but that's a weird thing to tell a kid. You want to tell them a little bit of like a line.
Sure.
Where it's like, maybe you don't, but I'm just saying, I feel like the church does.
Yes.
In these days, it's like,
I think,
if, but make sure that you ask God into your heart and pray to him this prayer, and then you can go to heaven, and then you'll go to heaven, and then, or whatever. Like, I had that day at church where it was like, are you going to ask God to be in your heart and save you? And it's like, I guess, but I thought I already was. And so then, sure, I did it, and I was like, I don't feel any different. I wasn't baptized at the time either, at that same time, but I was like 7 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay. And then I remember doing it again and again because I was like, I don't feel different. Mom, is this like, am I okay?
And you wanted like an angel to come and speak to you and say,
well, I don't really know, but I. They just made it seem like this big, big deal. Like, you're not saved yet. Have you asked God to be in your heart?
Right.
No, not specifically, but I've prayed with my mom and dad every day. I've done this, and I feel like I ask God questions, you know, even at 6 years old.
Right.
So anyway, I'm just saying some of those definitive,
yeah,
practices that happen in the church sometimes can be more harmful than good.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Yes, I completely agree with that. I do think that I would propose that most of the hard and fast lines that Christians draw are more to appease Christians than to appease God.
Whoa.
Maybe not more. I would say there are a lot of, yes, I feel like there are a lot of people I've met where they say this and this, yeah, these are the hard and fast lines of salvation.
Mm-hmm.
And I look for biblical support and go, yes, I don't think that those are. There are many times where Paul says, this is Paul speaking, not the Lord, right? There are multiple occasions where he goes, this isn't a doctrinal issue. This is merely a disciplinary issue, a preferential issue. Yeah, I think those are important distinctions to make that I don't think are made very often.
Mm.
So, I guess maybe I would stick to that original statement. I think there are a lot of hard and fast lines that Christians draw that are more to appease us because we're tired of living in the tension, because it's uncomfortable to live in tension. It's uncomfortable to live in uncertainty. It's uncomfortable
it's
to live in gray
It's interesting
for
area. You because I feel like you love defining terms
no.
all the time.
I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do love defining terms. I don't think defining terms is the same as defining reality.
Oh, I would say that you'd also like to do that.
I want to understand reality. I want to understand what's true.
And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just trying to.
Right. No. And I know I'm a weird enigma. And I think all people ultimately in some ways are walking contradictions in I say this and do that. And I think in a lot of ways there is a way of doing that I think is extremely healthy. And I think I'm pursuing that, sure, where I can go, this, when I look around the world, this, whatever it is, seems to be the truth, seems to be real. I don't know if I can back that up and support it in any other way than just, it seems to be real. And it seems crazy that it's not. I can't name an example. Maybe that's
No, it's okay. It's hard to... These types of things are just very hard because you want to have a strong belief, but I feel like the next day I could be like, well, that doesn't hold up.
And I would say
it's hard to know like what to trust sometimes.
I don't think having a strong belief is equivalent to having definite answers. I think there are great... I think... Let me preface it by saying this. Because I believe God is this infinite being who has no beginning, who has no end, who is the uncreated, and we are creations of the uncreated, we are by nature finite, I don't believe I can fully comprehend all of reality. So I walk into every discussion going, I don't think I'll fully be able to understand this. I think there will always, in almost any issue, and anything regarding, anything related to reality, which again I believe is dictated by God, who is infinite, everything ultimately will always go back to the uncreated Trinity. Everything ultimately has some semblance of mystery that I will never fully understand, at least on this side of eternity, right? Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting having conversations with you because...
Because I can be so dogmatic and like...
Your conversation style is very like, this is it. So it's just... And I know, knowing you, sure. I know that's just your tone is just...
Yes.
Comes across that way because you're trying to believe what you're saying as you're saying. I don't know.
I think also a lot of the things I've shifted over the past several months. Before it was, I have this tiny idea. Liv, I'm going to rope you into this and talk this out with me so that I can learn what I believe about this. And I was a very external processor. I'm still a very external processor. I feel like I've gotten a lot better at, I'm going to take time and just find like what answer do I find most peace with? Pray about that for a long time, and then slowly bring it into people. Sure. And so with that, because some of the things I've talked to you more recently about, I've been thinking about for 4 months, and I've had more or less my mind made up on X, Y, or Z area of it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, sometimes I can, and sometimes I believe on this definition of this term, and I believe on this definition of that term, how exactly they relate, that's what I'm discussing with you. Yeah.
Well, good discussion. That. Thanks for talking, Aiden.
Mm-hmm. I watched Muppet Treasure Island the other night.
You did?
Yep.
Nice.
It was very good. Just want to let everyone know. It's still good. If you haven't seen it in a while, I'd recommend it. And if you haven't ever seen it, I'd still recommend it. It's a good time.
Reminder again, our album is out.
Yes.
Companions in Passing on all streaming services.
We also have a show on August 5th in Athens, Georgia at International Grill and Bar.
For those of you.
For those of our Athens fans. Jeremiah now lives in Nashville. They used to live in Athens. So that's a fun part of the day.
Hope everyone has a great week.
Yeah. Let us know your thoughts. We are a couple of kids who think we know better. We're just spitballing. We have hard and fast definitive answers on very little. So share your thoughts with us. You have anything else you want to say, Liv?
I don't think so.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all next week for a brand new episode of
Between Takes.